Okay, tonight is Wednesday night, May 24th, or 29th day of the month of Sivan. This is the women's Mishnah share. We're up to the middle of the 8th parak of Maseches Chulin, Daf Kuf Ches Amud Aleph. Okay, Rabotai. Start a new Mishnah tonight, which touches upon some of the very basic principles of the laws of kashrut, of transfer of taste. So the Mishnah makes the following statement. Tipat chalav. Tipat chalav. If a drop of milk, shenafla al hachaticha, that fell on a piece of meat. A drop of milk fell on a piece of meat. Im yesh ba binotein ta'am be'ota chaticha asur. If there is a milky taste in this particular piece of meat, then it is prohibited.
This is a cooked piece?
As it's cooking. It's cooking. In the pot. There are many pieces of meat, but here the milk drop fell only on one piece of meat. I'm going to talk about it in a second. Yeah. Now, the rest of the pieces of meat, you have nothing to worry about as long as you did not stir the pot. But if you stirred the pot when the drop of milk fell in, then we now assume that the drop of milk did not concentrate on this piece of meat, but was diffused amongst all of the pieces of meat.
And then it's...
So now...
60th.
So now... No, nothing about... I didn't say one word about 60th. Says the Mishnah, now, im yesh ni'eres hakadera, if he mixed, stirred the pot, im yesh ba benotein tam, be'ota kidera asur. Now you have to taste every piece of meat to see if the milk taste has had an impact. In all probability, it has not, because it's now diffused amongst various pieces of meat. In the first case where you had not stirred it, all you have to taste is one piece of meat, and there is a better chance that that drop of milk actually did impact only one piece of meat, as opposed to when it has to go ahead and impact several pieces of meat. Fine. That's what the Mishnah says. So let's spend some time analyzing this Mishnah. So you noticed that the Mishnah never said anything about ratios. According to the primary halakha, that is what is stated by the Mishnah. The way to determine whether or not transfer of taste has taken place is to taste it. And what you do is you ask a Gentile expert chef to taste it and say, what does this taste like? So if he says, tastes like a piece of meat, you're allowed to eat it. If he says it has this milky flavor to it, then you're not allowed to eat it. That's the primary ha'alacha. Nesinas tam, to determine nesinas tam, you have to taste it. Yes.
Is there a time limit or minimum or X amount of time?
No. No.
Does it dissipate
soon? Or it finishes cooking?
No. Whenever you notice it.
Take it out of the pot?
Makes no difference. Well, the only thing about taking it out of the pot will be later on in the Gemara, what happens if the drop of milk was, a guy tasted it right away, and he said, somebody tasted it eventually. Now what happens to the rest of the meat in the pot? We'll talk about that in the Gemara. But right now we're focusing on the one piece of meat upon which the drop of milk fell.
Does this non-Jew who's tasting it have to be in the dark about what's at stake?
Yes. That's called Let me just get.
It'll come
in a second. Yes, he has to be unaware of the fact that your determination, his determination, will enable you to either eat the meat or Masiach lefi tumo. Masiach lefi tumo. Just giving an off-the-cuff remark without knowing that his comment will dictate and determine whether you can eat it or not.
So it's kind of like being called a little kid up when you think a Torah is possible.
That's something like it, right? But here it has to be a Gentile, because in case it's Jewish and you do taste it, he's eating non-kosher meat. He's eating basa b'chalav. So that's why we call up a kfela. It's called Masiach Mem Samach Yudchet Lefi Tumo Tuf Vav Mem Vav Masiach Lefi Tumo. Now this halacha of Masiach Lefi Tumo is used in other circumstances where typically a person's testimony would not have been accepted. Under ordinary circumstances, a Gentile does not have halachic reliability. But we allow a Gentile to do so if he's Masiach Lefi Tumo. I'll give you another illustration. Normally women are not permitted to testify in court. But the halacha said, in order to determine that a husband has died and that the wife can remarry, we accept the testimony of a woman who will report, either I know that my husband died, or I know that your husband died. When she's not aware of the fact that her testimony is going to dictate and determine that what? That you can remarry based on the fact that the husband died. So there also, again, it's normally somebody whose testimony is not accepted. When we do accept it, it's only when it's Masiach Lefi Tumo. When the Masiach means to talk. No. Masiach
Lasuach.
To speak.
Right.
Tumo means like an innocent remark. Tmimut. Tumo. It's just an innocent remark. They're doing it out of tmimut. Namely, that they're saying it because that's what they take, not because they understand that there is consequences to the remark. That's the way the halacha is recorded in Shulchan Aruch. You give it to, it's called Ti'imat Kifela. Kuf Pei Yud Lamed Aleph. Kifela is a connoisseur, an expert. Beefsteak Charlie. That's who you give it to. Beefsteak Charlie. He's not Jewish. That's what I was told. Beefsteak will now make the determination whether or not you're allowed to eat this piece of meat or not. Fine. The Ramah, don't forget, living in Krakow in the 1500s, doesn't know of a Gentile who reports things honestly. He doesn't know that such a Gentile exists. He always perceives the Gentile community as trying to mess us up. As a result, says the Ramah, we no longer rely on Beefsteak Charlie. Because there is no Beefsteak Charlie who's going to give us accurate information. From now on, we operate with Shishim. Always with Shishim. Which Chazal have established is the amount necessary to overpower another item and to determine that if there is 60 times the volume of meat to the drop of milk, under those circumstances, transfer of taste is impossible. The meat will always overpower. So today, Ein Onu Somchen Al Kfela, we always ask the question, is there shishim or is there no shishim? No shishim. That's the way we operate. But the Mishnah doesn't talk about it because the Mishnah still relies on the halakha of ti'imat kifela. Kifela.
It seems like a useless exercise because if there's one drop and the goy eats it, tastes it, then there's nothing left anyway. So
no, it doesn't make sense. It's a big piece of meat and he takes a little bite.
He cuts off one drop goes on.
One drop goes on a piece of meat that's cooking in the pot.
It spreads, yeah. Not on the one dot.
Then now you don't see it anymore.
It diffuses.
It diffused into diffuses. The piece of meat as it's cooked. Yeah. Now you give a cut off a piece, tell Beefsteak to taste it, and say, let me see how he comments. Does he see a milky taste to it or not? Yeah. Now, let's take a look at Rashi on the right-hand side of the page. Rashi explains it very well. Tipa chala shenafla al hachatecha. Bitoch hakedera. It fell on a piece of meat in the pot. Al achas min hachatechot. On only one of the pieces of meat. Velo hegis et hakedera. He did not stir the pieces of meat, the pot. And as a result, lo nechlak tam hatipa. This drop only diffused ela leota chaticha bilvan. It only possibly could have diffused if what? Onto that one piece of meat. Because you did not stir it. So Rashi says, im yesh ba binotein tam, beota chaticha. If there is no taste, or there is taste, in that piece of meat. Now Rashi already knows that there is a problem with what? With tasting it, because we don't necessarily... Rashi also didn't want to trust Gentiles. So what does he write? Kilomar. In other words, She'ein be'ota chaticha levada shishim levatel hatipa. There, if there isn't 60 times of this piece of meat against the drop of milk, then miyad ne'eseret hachaticha. If there is less than shishim of the meat against this one drop of milk, this piece of meat becomes automatically prohibited. Ubishar chatichot kedera. And what now happens to the rest of the pot, pieces of meat in the pot? Lo airi tana de masnitin. The author of our Mishnah is not interested in discussing the other pieces of meat now. The Gemara later will, as Rashi says. Ubi Gemara pligiba, and the Gemara now quotes a debate. Im chozeret ota chaticha the osratan olo. Does that piece of meat now automatically prohibit the other pieces of meat? Now, why might it prohibit the other pieces of meat? Because once the drop of milk spread to the whole piece of meat and there was less than shishim, what is this whole piece of meat now called? Basa b'chala. Treif. The Gemara is going to call it like nevela. Like a piece of nevela. So now you have in your pot one piece of kosher meat, or many pieces of kosher meat, and one piece of non-kosher meat. So now, how do you rule when you have a pot which had all kosher meat and somebody threw in one non-kosher piece of meat, a meat piece which was treifa or a piece which is nevela? How would you rule in such a case? Tell me what's the principle that you... What are the two possibilities? Yes?
One possibility is one out of 60 and the other is broke.
No. 60, that's why I wanted you to say that. 60 only works when, write this down, 60 it only works when it's min b'she'eino mino. When there is a mixture of two different products, then we measure by 60. Because 60 is the number that is given to us that there is a transfer of taste of the milk, which has a distinct taste, versus meat, which it has a distinct taste. But now, when I asked you my second question, a pot full of kosher meat and a piece of trefa meat, you can't taste anything and see if the trefa meat went in. Because meat tastes like meat, whether it's kosher or not. It's meat. It's a piece of, brisket. And just because the animal was a trefa doesn't change the taste. So 60 does absolutely nothing. So what will happen, the Gemara says? There is a machloket. The Chachamim say you operate with rov. Rov, which is the d'oraisa operation of bittul. Rov, majority rules. As it says in the Torah, acharei rabim lahatot. Just look at the majority.
So if you have 10 tray pieces of meat in the pot and you have 12 kosher, you can eat it?
Yes, can eat all 22.
Okay, we certainly don't hold that.
Don't be so sure.
Does that sound crazy?
Don't be so sure, we'll see.
Well, we wouldn't do it anyways. Aesthetically, we wouldn't do it.
Okay, but if you're going back a generation ago, when a piece of meat was incredibly expensive in Europe, they didn't throw meat out so quickly if halakhically the halakha said you were allowed to eat it. They didn't. So that's the Chachamim's opinion. Rabbi Yehuda says, we'll learn it in the Gemara, probably next time. Rabbi Yehuda says, min bimino, when two products mix of the same item, afilu be'elef lo batel. Even if the ratio is 1,000 kosher to 1 not kosher, it's not batel. There is no bitul whatsoever, according to Rav Yehuda, and as a result, what happens to the 1,000 pieces of meat? They're all prohibited. All prohibited.
Give it to the janitor.
So Rashi says the Mishnah doesn't choose to discuss this. Because after the one piece of drop of milk diffused over that one piece of meat, look at that one piece of meat as if it was a non-kosher piece of meat that fell into the pot. And what would Rabbi Yehuda say? We just said that it prohibits. So Rabbi Yehuda later will say in the Gemara that if this happens, you have to throw the whole pot out. If the one piece of meat was not 60 times greater than the drop of milk, it becomes asur, and now the mixture is a different type of mixture. It's no longer min b'she'eino, mino, milk and meat, but what is it? It's kosher meat with what? Non-kosher meat. The whole pot has to be thrown out.
And actually, does that transfer to the pot and the utensil as well?
Of course. We'll talk about that a little later. Yes, of course. The pot has to be kosher. No doubt. Yes.
But when you're saying consider like a piece of non-kosher meat, the thing about non-kosher meat and kosher meat is you can't tell the difference in taste.
Correct.
They both taste exactly the same. But this piece of meat with a drop of milk, we just said you can tell the difference in taste.
But there is no taster, no beefsteak around. So what do we use?
Shishim.
We don't do it anymore.
Right.
So under those circumstances, what's the only way for you to determine whether you can eat this piece of meat? If there is 60 times more meat than the drop of milk. If it's 59 times, now what happens?
That wasn't my question, though.
Now what happens? That piece of meat becomes prohibited.
Yes.
Good.
Right, but that piece of meat becomes prohibited, but you're saying that piece of meat now treated as if it's a treated piece of meat.
Yes.
Where you can't tell the difference in taste. But it's not something where you can't tell the difference in taste. We've just said, by definition, it is something where you can tell the difference in taste.
But no one is going to taste it anymore. We've thrown that halacha away, says the Ramah, and Rashi says so the same thing.
Okay, so yes,
in theory,
looks.
That's correct.
It looks just like the other.
Yes.
And we all had to go on that with looks.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That's what Rashi says. Let's continue with the Rashi. However, ni'er et hakdeira, if when the drop of milk you were stirring, when the drop of milk falls in, you were stirring the pot, hegis ba miyad, if you mixed it right away, as soon as the drop of milk fell in, you now took your spoon or fork and started mixing it. Kodem shikibla hachatichata min atipa, before the single piece of meat upon which the drop of milk fell had a chance to be diffused into what? To the one piece of meat. Then, the hashta nitarva hatipa bikulan. The drop of milk has been spread amongst all the pieces of meat. So the Mishnah says, "In yeshba benotein tam ba'oto kideira." Now you have to take all of the pieces of meat, according to the Mishnah. You have to taste all of the pieces of meat and have beefsteak taste all of them. Kilomar, ein bekoach b'tipa le'esor kulan. There is no power within this drop of milk to prohibit all of them. Ela im kain yesh binosein tam litain b'chol hakadeira. Beefsteak has to taste every piece of meat. Okay? And if he says, I don't notice any milk in this one, it's automatically mutter. I don't know any reason. If he finds one, okay, that one's awesome. That's what you do under those circumstances. In all likelihood, he will not be able to notice the milky taste in any, because it was supposedly diffused in all of the pieces once you stirred it right away. Yes?
The way you translated it, if you were in the process of stirring it when the drop fell in.
Yes.
Okay, how about if you saw the drop and decided to stir it?
That's fine.
That's legitimate.
Yeah, Rashi says as long as you do it right away.
Right away.
Hegis ba miyad. As soon as it falls in, you stir it. Yes.
And then one part 60 applies to the whole pot.
Yes. Now, today we don't have beefsteak. So now you take all of the pieces of meat and you measure, do they outweigh the drop of milk by 60 to 1? Or all the products in the pot, there could be some vegetables, everything. Everything that's in that pot is now contributes to creating the shishim against the drop of milk. Against the drop of milk.
160.
Good.
160.
What?
160.
That's what the Chachamim say is what they believe is the number which precludes transfer of taste. If the ratio is more than 1 to 60, transfer of taste does not take place. That's their experience. Less than 60, transfer of taste takes place. Now, I want to look, before I continue with anything else, I want to look at potential biblical sources to understand why is it that ta'am, taste, becomes a factor. After the milk has been absorbed, this one drop of milk, you don't even see the milk any longer. You don't see it. So, what when I'm cooking away the rest of the time, what do I see in my pot? Just meat. So why is it that taste suddenly becomes a factor? It's no longer here. Let's assume that what? That it evaporated. Who said it made it taste? It just, the heat evaporated and that's it. How do I know that there is a halakha that we are concerned with time? So much so that we believe that the taste will actually wind up where? In the walls of the pot. Now certainly there is no meat in the pot and there is no milk in the pot. That we know for sure. It's not in the walls. What potentially gets into the wall of the pot? Only ta'am. How do I know that the Torah tells us to be concerned about ta'am. How do I know that? Is it a rabbinic law, or are there any sources in the Torah that we can identify for the issue? Here is the question, whether ta'am ke'ikar. Maze ikar?
The original,
like the main thing. It's like the original ingredient. It's as if the ingredient is still here. How do I know that? So the Gemara cites two potential sources. Our Gemara later on, Rava will say, maybe we learn it out from Basa B'Chalav itself. We'll see. But turn now to page number 2 for a minute. This is a Gemara Satan. And I saved a whole tree by just writing the word on the bottom of the page, of the previous page, and I didn't have to photostat it. But in order to appreciate it, first look at page 3, and then you'll see the word upon which the Gemara is quoting. This is a pasuk in Parshat Naso, and discusses a Nazir. Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Limor. Next week's parsha. Daber el bnei Yisrael v'amarta lehem, ish o isha ki yafli lindor neder nazir. If a man or a woman will make a vow to become a nazir, lahazir lashem, to become a nazir unto God. Here are the rules. Miyayin v'shechar yazir. He is to stay a wine from fresh wine, wine that just became wine. Shechar in modern Hebrew is translated as beer. In the Torah it means, like we translated in Torah Samus, altavine, wine that has been aged, but it's wine. Yazir, he should stay away from that. Chometz yayin, even wine vinegar, or chometz shechar, vinegar made from aged wine, he should lo yishteh, he shall not drink. V'chol mishrat anavim lo yishteh. What do you think that means? Mishrat anavim. So take a look at Rashi below. It's on the left-hand column of the Rashi, the top line. V'chol mishrat. Says Rashi, Lashon tzvi'a b'mayim o b'chol mashkeh. What happens?
It's a coloring.
I took grapes, wine grapes, and I simply had soaked them in water. What happened to the water eventually? It turns red. Took on the color of wine. This person, the Nazir, is not permitted to drink that water. Even though I took the grapes out. I took the wine grapes out. So what's really left in the... I didn't squeeze the grapes. I just left it in. What's really left? Ta'am. It's somehow, it's a residue of the taste of the grapes. And that impacts the color and ultimately the taste. Even though you're not actually drinking real wine. So potential source number one, that ta'am is considered an issue, is from the laws of Nazir. That a Nazir is not permitted to drink water in which grapes have soaked and changed color a little. Because we assume that it has acquired the taste of the wine grapes.
Which is interesting because the prohibition against wine for the Nazir is not based, really based on the taste, it's based on what wine, how wine makes you feel, the alcoholic base. That's not the base of
He'd say, he's not allowed to eat grapes, he needed the wine grapes. Anavim lachim. V'yaveishim, moist grapes and dried out wine grapes, lo yokal, it's not allowed to eat. It's got nothing to do with the alcohol. Because that's what the Torah prohibits for a Nazir. Yeah? Ultimately, you're right. It's really designed to prohibit wine. But the Torah makes it abundantly clear that even the grape juice is certainly prohibited. Fine. So that's one potential source that the Torah is concerned with the Tam. If the Torah was not concerned with the Tam, it would never prohibit the Nazir of drinking that water, because it's basically water that has a little flavor of wine. But it's not wine. No one ever said it's wine.
It has the flavor of grapes. Really.
Flavor of grapes, exactly. Right?
And the word Nishra actually means what?
To soak. To soak. Yeah. That's possibility number one.
How do you know it's not just the colors? Yeah. It's also the taste.
Because we know that the reason why he, if it would be just be the color, that means he's not really eating grapes. It's just a color. The prohibition is to drink or eat grapes, wine grapes. That's the prohibition, as the Torah says, Anavim lo yochal. So if it's just the coloring, why is he, no one ever said that he's eating or drinking wine or eating grapes. It's not, if it doesn't taste, if it has no impact on the taste, then what's he doing? He's drinking water, which happens to be colored water. So when you buy a bottle of colored water today, that doesn't, it's still water. Just because it has coloring in it doesn't mean it's got to be the taste. Then there is a potential second biblical source. Go to page 4 for a minute. This is at the towards the end of Sefer Bamidbar. And the unit is talking about Nikmat HaMidyanim. Since the Midianite went ahead and got the Nasi of Shevet Shimon, Kozbi Basur, in trouble by seducing him with this Midianite woman, Elazar is told by Moshe, we're going to wage a battle against the Midianite. And they actually destroy the Midianites. And now Elazar tells the following to the people coming back from war. I bracket it in the middle of the page. Vayomer Elazar HaKohen El Anshei HaTzava HaBaim LaMalchama. Zot Chukat HaTorah Asher Tziva Hashem Et Moshe. These are the following laws which Moshe God commanded Moshe to tell us. Ach et hazahav, et hakosef, et hanechoshet, et habarzel, et habdil, et haofaret. Any utensil that you now brought back as the booty from the war, such as gold, silver, copper, metal, lead. Now, you brought back a gold set of or silver set of sterling during the war. Are you allowed to use it or not? The Midianite sterling set of silver. So what does he say? Kol davar asher yavo ba'esh, whatever is typically used over fire, ta'aviru ba'esh v'taher. You have to put it into a fire and what? And cleanse it. In addition, ach b'mei nida yitchata. It also has to be, you also have to apply the ashes of the para aduma. I'm not going to discuss that now. V'chol asher lo yavo ba'esh, taviru b'mayim. And anything which its primary use was not over fire, but rather cooked with water. So what do? How do you purge it? With by water. Putting it into water. So, very simple rules of Haggalah. So if you took a spit from the Midianites, which was used directly over a fire, so now, before you use it for your kosher meat, you have to put it over a fire, and what's going to happen when you expose it to the fire? The taste of the Midianite meat is going to be purged by the heat applied to the spit. Now, after you apply it to the fire, it's tasteless. Now you can use it. But if you don't kosher it, if you don't purge it of the taste, the very first time that you use the spit to make your kosher hot dogs or hamburgers, whatever it is,
the taste
will be purged as a result of the subsequent heat and will wind up in your kosher meat. Same thing is true with a pot that's used over water. If the Midianite cooked a stew in this pot over an oven with water, under those circumstances, you have to put it into boiling water and boil it and to allow the water to absorb all of the purged taste that will be purged from the wall of the pot. Then you spill out the water and that's it. And now, subsequently, when you apply your water in your stew, it will not have any residue taste from the pot coming into your kosher stew. So this halacha also is predicated upon taste. Because no one ever suspected that Elazar would have to tell the Jews not to eat from the Midianite utensils if it had meat on it. Of course you can't eat the meat that's on it. It's not kosher meat. But the assumption would be that it was cleaned. So there is no longer any real meat. It's just the residue taste. And somehow, even though no one has ever tasted the taste in a pot, in a knife, we believe, because the Torah tells us so, that the residue tam somehow is lodged in that wall and will be purged at the next application of heat. At the next application of heat. So some cite this pasuk as the basis of teaching us the halakha that ta'am ki'ikar, that the taste of something, even though there is no longer any prohibiting item, there is no longer any non-kosher meat around, the utensils still have to be dealt with, and you have to kosher all those utensils. And that's what we do today. You buy something from a non-Jew that was used, you have to kosher it. Or if anybody didn't keep kosher, you have to kosher it. And if it's something that can't be koshered, so that's it. You can't use it. Can't use it. Let's just say it's a kli cheres, an earthenware utensil. You can't kosher earthenware utensils. We Ashkenazic Jews don't allow koshering of glass. We don't kosher glass. Sephardic Jews follow the real halacha, and glass does not absorb anything. That's the real halacha. So you're allowed to use a set of glassware and dishes. You only need one set of dishes, according to the real Sfarim. They use it for milchus and fleishus because it doesn't absorb anything. If it doesn't absorb, you don't have to worry about purge. You can use from non-kosher everything. Wow. We Ashkenazic Jews are machmir and treat glass like earthenware utensils, with the exception of glasses, of cups, which you use for cold only. Cold only, you can use drink in glasses, you can use them for milk, exflation, makes no difference. And for Pesach, you have this funny way of kashering it. You fill it up with water, you change the water every 24 hours for 3 days. Nobody understands the mechanics of it, but that's what we Ashkenazic Jews do. Sephardim, all you need is one set of dish, you use it for Pesach, for chametz, for everything. It makes no difference. It's very easy. Very easy to be a Sephardic Jew because the Mechaber 99% formulates the halacha based on the primary halacha, no chumrot. The Ramah, as a result of living in a persecution neighborhood, that's how Ashkenazic Jews felt that they're going to be protected by God. By being as stringent as possible with halacha. That's the way historians explain it. That's why, because they were always subjected to more and more attack. So they look to be, maybe we're doing something wrong, we're not making HaKadosh Baruch Hu happy. So the Ramah quotes every Chumrah on the planet, and that's the way, unfortunately or fortunately, that's the way we follow. So those are the two possible sources to teach us that Ta'am Ke'ikah. Good. Go back to page number 1. I'm sorry that the top Tosfos got cut off a little. But the main part of the Tosis is there. On the third word of the top line, which is a little cut off, it says, Kisha hachaticha kula chutz lirotav airi. Kisha hachaticha, Tosfot adds something that Rashi did not mention. That's why I'm reading it. Namely, that when the drop of milk falls onto the single piece of meat, the only way that it will be limited to that piece of meat is if it's out of the gravy, the sauce. But if that one piece of meat is sitting in the gravy, once it's in the gravy, the taste, once it enters into the piece of meat, will also be automatically diffused into what? Into the gravy. To the gravy. And now the gravy is all over the joint because it's a liquid. The gravy will now go ahead and prohibit all of the pieces of meat in the pot. If beefsteak says, I noticed the taste of milk, where? In any of the pieces of meat. Any piece of meat. Because it will not be contained to that single piece of meat upon which it fell if it's in gravy. So, if that's what Tosfos says. When do we measure or have beefsteak check only that one piece of meat? Kishahachaticha kula chutz lerotev. When that old single piece of meat upon which the drop of milk fell is completely out of the gravy.
Was there ever a time where they taste the gravy?
No.
That's irrelevant.
No, irrelevant.
And also,
yes.
Is it only milk? What if it was a solid milk thing?
Like what?
A piece of hard cheese that doesn't spread, like a liquid milk spreads, and that's why you're saying it's going to go to
No,
things.
First of all, when you put a piece of cheese in gravy, it's going to melt.
It melts.
But the cheese will melt, and it eventually will become
not as quickly. As
not as quickly. That is true. But eventually, it'll.
So you would think about a piece of cheese. You would pull off that piece of cheese from that piece of meat.
Okay, that's very true. That's probably true. If you pulled it out right away, in all probability, it didn't even make an impact on that piece of meat. Right. Correct. I'm not saying no. Says Sois Tosis. Line number two. Ulekach, because it's out of the gravy, misha'arinan, we measure it, be'ota chaticha, only against that piece, livatel hatipa, to annul that drop of milk. Velo b'sha'ar chatichot. But we do not measure it against the other pieces of meat, because it's been out of the gravy. Why? Now Tosfos tells us, the chelev, fat, which is a liquidy substance, mifapeya al kol hachaticha. If there is any fat lying around, that will help everything spread, and the gravy is like fat. That's what Tosfos says. The gravy and fat have the capacity to take the drop and spread it to any place it comes in contact with. So gravy will, because it's a liquid, will indeed come in contact with everything in the pot. Fat, whatever else it touches. So the fat will absorb it from piece number one and then transfer that taste to all the other pieces. Hence, says Tosafot, it must be talking about that it's out of the gravy. Out of the gravy. And in a pot that's cooking over a flame, it's highly unlikely that there's not going to be any gravy. Because you usually put in water with it, otherwise it'll burn. So there will probably be some gravy. So here, the gravy plays a significant factor in determining the halakha. There are times when gravy plays no significant role whatsoever. This is a very famous quote from the Rav. In terms of warming something up on Shabbos, warming up, everybody knows the difference, that once a solid has been cooked, we apply the rule of ein bishul achar bishul. Once something has been fully cooked, it cannot be subject to the rules of bishul a second time on Shabbos. Hence, you're only dealing with a warming up issue. However, liquids, let's like a soup, we paskin yesh bishul achar bishul. And the reason is because with a soup, no one eats today. Okay, you can have a fruit soup that you'll eat cold, but most soups in the time of the Gemara, and even today, most soups, by definition, it has to be hot. So even though it was fully cooked, you're never going to serve chicken soup or a vegetable soup that's completely cold. So when you apply the heat the second time, that's part of the preparation process, and we therefore we say, yesh bishul achar bishul. So the question is, what happens if you have meat with gravy? Can you warm that up on Shabbos or not? So the Rav gave the very simple rule how to dictate and determine. If you eat the item with a fork, it's called a salad. If you eat the item with a spoon, it's called a liquid. Very simple. So if you have soup, you can never reheat Shabbos morning once you put it in the refrigerator. It can be on the black all night, that's no problem. But once you put it gets cold, below Yatso Ledes, you can never warm up soup. How do you eat soup? With a spoon. But you can warm up a roast or chicken with gravy because you eat it with a fork. And therefore, the liquid is by definition part and parcel of the salad. It does not contain its own halakhic entity when it comes to Hilchot Shabbat. And therefore, he said unequivocally, if you do what the Rama says you should do, who cites the Rama, that you have it on the blech Friday night when you light candles for about 45 minutes till Shabbos comes. Even though you're not planning on eating, using it Friday night. You put it on the blech, then you can take it off the blech, put it in the refrigerator. Next morning, you can take it out and warm it up as much as you'd like. Warm it up as much as you'd like. Why? Because you've covered all your bases. If there is a blech, you can't see the fire. And that's what Chazal were worried about. That if you have an open fire, you're gonna forget and raise the flame. You'll stir the coals in the Lashon of the Gemara. So if you have it covered, that reminds you not to raise the heat. And if you put it on the blech, but when you light candles, it shows everybody it's already fully cooked, and takes away the derabanan of mechzei kibishul. It looks like you're cooking on Shabbos. If you take something out of the refrigerator and you put it on the stove, it looks like you're cooking on Shabbos. Since it was out on the blech already Friday night, it showed everybody this has been cooked. So the Ran, cited by the Rama, says that's all you got to do in order to warm something up. That's all you have to do. But there, the gravy is considered incidental and is batel to the meat. By the laws of kashrut, it's quite the opposite. The gravy not only maintains its own identity, it facilitates even faster the transfer of taste by virtue of the fact that it's a liquid and not a salad, so the taste, you know, spreads much more quickly and much more rapidly. Yeah.
Is the Rav one of the few people who holds that way?
No, it's black and white in the Ramah. The Rav didn't say any chiddush here. Just said paskin like that.
So many people would not do that.
I know.
But it's just wrong.
So many rabbeim, great rabbis today who learned with the Rav, never bother doing it. Sometimes they don't even quote him. That's what bothers me. They don't even quote him. Okay, you know what? You want a paskin like some people? My God, it's your prerogative. But not to even quote your Rebbe, the Rav, who said, that's the way I did it for 50 years. He said, the way father did it and grandfather did it. Yeah, that's all.
You want to quote the Ramah, that's even more.
Yeah, he quote the Ramah. He's just quoting. He says, I'm not saying any great tradition.
So why doesn't everybody quote the
I have no idea. I don't know. Because there are a lot of people who disagree with the Ramah. They don't like it. The Ran's quoting a Ran. The Ramah's quoting a Ran. Okay, so he quoted a Das Yachid. That's what they say. Everybody else disagrees. But the Ramah quoted one of the few leniencies which the Ramah quotes. Yeah. Yes. Okay. So now, let's continue with the Gemara a couple of lines. On page one again. Omar Abaye. Ta'amo velo mamasho be'alma de'oraita. When you're dealing only with ta'am, and not the item, mamash means the item itself. That drop of milk is no longer visible. It's no longer here. That issue of ta'am must be a de'oraita. That mid de'oraita we are concerned about the issue of ta'am. De'i salka daita de'rabanan. If you wanted to believe, as some authorities do believe, that the whole issue of ta'am has no biblical basis to it, despite the fact that I showed you a couple of sources in the text, they will believe it's only midrabanan. Mi basar bechalav, my time lo gamrina. Why can't we use our Mishnah of basar bechalav to teach us that indeed it is what? The oraita. Why can't we use it? Now what happens in basar bechalav? I take a piece of meat and I put a little milk on it. When you apply heat to it, what happens?
Cooking it.
And what happens to the milk? Do you see it? It dissipates. It evaporates. You don't see it. And yet, are you allowed to eat that piece of meat?
No.
Okay. So why can't... It's because of the time. But now, if you believe that in all over the Torah, time is not prohibited according to biblical law, why would it not be that I can learn from Basa B'Chalav to teach me that ta'am all over the Torah is prohibited? That's his question. Mi basar b'chalav, mai ta'ama lo gamrina. Why can't I learn the laws of ta'am from basar b'chalav? Assuming that the isur of ta'am is not to be applied anyplace else. Anyplace else. So by chametz, for example, this opinion will hold that if I only have ta'am, and I use a chametz dikapat to cook my kosher lepesach thing, min ha-Torah you're allowed to eat it. The Rabbanan say you can't eat it. But the Torah says you're allowed to eat it. Ask Sabayim, why can't I learn from what?
From
basar b'chalav, as a principle of to all of the Torah. My taima lo gamrina. Why wouldn't I be able to use the source of basar b'chalav as a primary source to teach me that ta'am is to be considered with throughout the Torah by chametz and anything else? Answers Abaye, the chidush hu, mazah chidush. It has a unique feature that doesn't apply anyplace else in the Torah. Every other time that you cook something with something permissible, what is the status of the item that you cook it with? Prohibited. Nevela, right. Trefa, chametz, all of that is prohibited. By basar b'chalav, is there anything before you started cooking, anything wrong with the milk?
No.
Anything wrong with the meat?
No.
So where else would you ever find a mixture of two permissible things? Now suddenly you put them together and what happens? They become prohibited. You never find that. If you take cucumbers and cook them with tomatoes, you know, they're both permissible. They both remain permissible. Every place in the Torah where you put two permissible items into a pot, they're permissible. The only exception is basar b'chalav. So since basar b'chalav has this element of chidush, what element of chidush? that it is prohibited, despite the fact that in its original form and shape, it was permissible milk and permissible meat. Therefore, you cannot use that as a litmus test and as a basis to formulate the halachic principle by all other issues. That's what Abaye said. The chidush. And if something is a chidush, it possesses a unique quality. Obviously, the laws are limited to be applied to this item and this item only. Asks the Gemara, yeah?
Doesn't it say the Torah?
I forget about those two sources that I told you. This opinion believes that he's going to have an answer for those two. Or maybe they're an exception to the rule. Only by Nazir, and only by Gyuli Akum and Yubayim, but any time else, don't do. That's not my concern now. We'll get to it later to understand the opinion who says that Tom on a Oraita level doesn't exist. We'll get to it later. Ask the Gemara, E Chidushu, if Basar Bechalav is so unique and it represents this Chidush, ask the Gemara, maybe afal gav the leka notain tanami. Maybe even if the milk does not transfer its taste to the meat, it should still be asur. That's the rule of the Torah. If you put in a drop of milk into a pot of meat, it automatically becomes asur. Who said that you have to what? Be guided by the principle of transference of taste. If it's such a special animal, by virtue of the fact that it was kosher milk and kosher meat, maybe you don't need any transfer of taste at all. Why does the Mishnah always keep on talking about if it transferred its taste to the piece of meat? Amalei Rava, so Rava told Abaye, you can't entertain that possibility. Because in all three times when the prohibition of basa b'chalav is used, how does the Torah prohibit it? Lo tivashel.
That's right.
Why does the Torah say lo tivashel? Why didn't the Torah just say lo ta'arev? Don't mix. Pour it in and mix it up. That's it. Because it wants the medium of heat. Why does it want the medium of heat? Because only the medium of heat can transfer taste. So if the Torah went out of its way, not once, not twice, but three times, to say the exact same phrase, Lo tivashel gidi b'chalei limo, it must be that the Torah is only concerned with chalav and basar that transfer its taste one to the other. But if there is no transfer of taste, it's permissible. Even though it has the chidush that both the milk and the meat were heter. So Rava rejects that possibility based on the fact that the Torah writes, Lo tivashel gidi, derech bishul asra Torah. Only through the medium of cooking does basa b'chalav on a d'oraisa level become prohibited. All other combinations of milk and meat are only rabbinically prohibited. To eat them together when you didn't cook them and so on and so forth, just putting a piece of cheese on a hamburger or something like that without cooking it together after the hamburger has been cooked, it's only us and the Rabbana. Derech Bishul Asra Torah. Only via the principle of Bishul, because Bishul has the capacity to transfer taste as a result of the medium of heat. Yeah.
It says don't cook a calf in its mother's milk, and the mother part just seems to be ignored and everything.
No, it's not.
Is it?
The reason why Rabbi Yossi, which we paskin like on a d'oraita level, says you're allowed to cook chicken in milk because a bird does not have its mother's milk. Doesn't have. So therefore, under those circumstances, according to Torah law, chicken is parv.
Like fish. Because those animals have a mother.
Yes, because those animals. Milk. That's correct. Yes.
Only those animals.
Only those animals. Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So it ignores it that it does not have to be its own mother's milk. But Rambam says, why does the Torah use that illustration? Because Rambam believes that milk and meat had idolatrous sources. And that's what they did. They offered the goat in its own mother's milk as part of their ritual pagan worship. That's what the Rambam says, yeah. Oh yeah. The Rambam has dozens of mitzvot of the Torah which he believes have pagan origins. Dozens of such mitzvot. Because nobody else explains it. Why does it? Oh, it's a hope. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. The Rambam believes that it's all pagan origin. And, yeah. Yeah. That's what he writes in his philosophic word, Guide to the Perplexed. Yes. The Rambam believes shaving your peyote for a man has pagan origins. That's the way the Galachim used to do. They put a soup bowl over their head, took a razor, and cut around it. That's the Rambam. It's all the Rambam.
The tattoo's the same thing.
The tattoo's the same thing, yes.
The tattoo themselves.
Yes, the Rambam is about 30 or 40 mitzvot and prohibitions which he believes have pagan origins. Yes.
I'm wondering, next Wednesday night, yes, is there any chance that we could meet?
It would be nice, but I'm already committed to giving a share that night. Yeah.
Interestingly enough, the Reform Movement, this is their rationale, probably. They say they follow Torah Judaism and not Rabbinic Judaism.
Yes, that is correct.
That's what they say.
That's why they don't, and they believe it has this pagan origin, right. And they don't think it's applicable anymore, so therefore they say.
They find excuses.
Yeah, find excuses. Yes. All right, we'll stop here and we'll continue in 2 weeks from tonight.
Thank you. I like what you said about heating up.
About what?
I like the heating up thing.
Oh, okay.
Makes my life easier.